When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back to another episode of The Mac Rumor Show. And we finally got what we were talking about. I mean, the rumors were correct. A little touch and go. I was thinking Wednesday, Hartley, Tuesday. I was thinking Tuesday we were going to get one, and then Wednesday we got another, and Thursday. So by Tuesday, when nothing happened, I was a little nervous. Probably not as nervous as Mark Gurman, but were you feeling a little?
A little bit. I was a little bit frustrated, you know, on each hour waiting for the press releases to come in. And then we got them all at once, which was a little bit unexpected. I was thinking maybe we would get one a day, something like that. But I think this is the first time where Apple has announced a new chip and three quite different products containing that chip all together at the same time. Normally, it groups things like we'll get a group of Macs or a group of iPads, but this time three completely different product lines, each with the same chip.
I'll explain a little funny story. So we don't have any insight as to when this is going to happen exactly. We kind of just refresh the newsroom like everybody else does. You know, maybe there's some other ways that we go about looking, but I am in a silo. I work on my own stuff, and traditionally all the writers such as Hartley and pretty much everyone else in the company, they are involved in a chat that I could go and check too, but I don't usually need to because it doesn't have anything to do with me for the most part. So I was refreshing at 9 a.m. I was dropping my son off at school. That was like my wife had something going on, so I had to do that. But I'm like, oh, I'll be in the office at like 9:10. It's fine. But I dropped him off. I checked my phone real quick before I left. It was like 9:02. I saw nothing. So I assumed there was nothing. So I didn't check anything. It was 9:55 and I looked at the main channel and you guys were all talking about all these products. And then I checked Mac Rumors and there was like six articles about all the new stuff. And I was freaking out. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like 45 minutes behind. So I got a little bit of a delayed start in my portion of the coverage, but you guys killed it as usual. You had everything going. So good job.
Thank you. It was a lot to manage all at once. Because although it wasn't quite an event's worth, getting all of those press releases dropping at the same time, four different press releases, each with their own set of details. And of course, Apple updates the online store as well. So there have been some other small changes and updates, like the fact that the iPad Air keyboard now comes in black. But not that anyone particularly cares about that, but that's the kind of thing that we're looking out for. We're looking for those changes on the site, and it's all happening all at once.
Right. So you guys are always looking around and I usually say, can someone ping me when this happens? And nobody pinged me, which is understandable. You guys got your own things going on. No one's worried about me, but like, I'm just not looking for that stuff. I'm like, if I'm not ready for it, I'm working on something else and I'm just not as, you know, attuned to what's going on. So yeah, it's funny that I didn't find out. And then I got like the, whoops, sorry, we forgot to let Dan know that the products were out. It's fine.
Well, you got there within an hour. So
the video went out and it did well. So I'm not mad about it. It's just one of those like, oh man, I was a little behind. So the iPad Air thing that you mentioned, the color, that's funny. I thought no one would care about that either. I've got a handful of comments that were like, you forgot to mention that the iPad Air keyboard came in black and now I'm going to buy one because I didn't want to buy it in white. And I was like, wow, a lot of people did actually care about that. I'm surprised. we'll start in the level of care, speaking of, with these products, because and by level of care, I mean more of the exciting parts. These are good products because the M5 chip seems like a pretty big upgrade in certain areas. You know, Apple compared it to the M1 chip in one example, and I laughed because I'm like, well, obviously it's going to be a lot better. It's nearly 4 years old. But I mean, the M5 MacBook Pro is kind of just, I don't know. What do we call that? It's just a chip improvement and that's it. There's really nothing else. I was really hoping for like cellular connectivity at some point. Maybe the chip would have came in there, the C1X maybe, but we got nothing.
Well, I think that Apple is clearly holding off for a bigger MacBook Pro upgrade either later next year or in early 2027. We know we've got this new version with an OLED display, a new design, a thinner design. We've had the current design lingering now for nearly 5 years, and it's time for something new. But that makes this current M5 MacBook Pro kind of the last refresh of this current design. And it's a pretty mature device at this point. There's not a huge amount that can be done while retaining that same device. So there are some important changes here. We've got more memory bandwidth. You can now configure the base model with more storage. And one of the main upgrades is that the GPU of the M5 chip is significantly more powerful and attuned for AI tasks. It certainly is more capable with gaming, and we are pretty used to these year-on-year upgrades now where we're getting 10, 20%, sometimes more than that, improved performance over the previous year in both single and multi-core performance benchmarks. Of course, Apple doesn't really release benchmarks or anything like that. It will just tell us stuff like, oh, it's however many times faster than the previous generation, or it will go back a few chip generations if it really wants to emphasize it.
Right, so 45% faster graphics compared to the M4 chip, which is huge. I mean, you're nearly at 50%. That's a lot. Like, for a year-over-year upgrade, 15% faster CPU performance. It seems like it's a lot easier for them to make huge gains in GPU than it is CPU each year, which, I mean, makes sense. But that's kind of where we're at with the performance of the M5 chip. I will say, do you think that now they're going to start, because this is a staggered release, that maybe now they'll, in 26, do the M5 Pro and M5 Max with the redesign and the OLEDs and all that stuff and add some beefier features? Or is this just going to be, these are the three, you're going to get the chip bump in that one, but there's nothing else happening?
I think that will probably be the case. I think that the best analogy we have for this kind of release is actually the first Apple Silicon MacBook Pro, which, if you remember, way back in November 2020, was the same design as the previous MacBook Pros, but it just had the M1 chip. There was no M1 Pro, there was no M1 Max, and that was all that was available. And it took Apple a good 6 months before it introduced the redesign with those high-end models. This year, although we are waiting for a redesign, I think Apple wants to get all of the M5 family out the door before it starts looking at this substantial upgrade. I don't think we're going to be left for too long with M4 Pro and M4 Max machines sitting alongside an M5 machine. Because although you and I understand it, and probably anyone listening to this podcast understands it, the average consumer is a little bit confused by things like that. And we'll think, well, hang on, why does the cheaper one have an M5, but the more expensive one have an M4? And of course, it does make sense that those are more powerful chips, but based on older technology. And this is a more entry-level chip, but it's a newer chip generation. But I think that Apple wants to avoid that kind of predicament in stores. And so it probably won't be too long. Maybe we get to February, March time, even January potentially.
Didn't we get January last time?
We have had a January release for one of the new MacBook Pros in recent years. I don't remember which one it was. It may well have been the last one, in fact.
I think it was.
So, I think that it's interesting how the entry-level MacBook Pro has kind of carved out its own space in the lineup. There was a while when we did not have that option. A lot of people who want a little bit more than a MacBook Air didn't really have anywhere to go. And now there is an option for that. So you get the same display, you get the same larger battery, you get the Pro design, and also you get active cooling as well, which makes quite a significant difference. But you don't necessarily need the performance of a Pro chip, and that makes it a lot more accessible. So particularly for business customers, it's quite an attractive proposition.
Hey guys, just want to take a quick break and let you know this episode of the Mac Rumors Show is sponsored by Shopify. You know, when I first started out doing YouTube, and then eventually it led me to this role here that I have now, and especially starting the podcast, it felt like I had to kind of figure everything out myself, at first, at least with videos, its scripts, and getting the, you know, right uploads going, and then eventually it leads to logos, and if you want to do merch and up, it's just a lot. And that's true for anyone starting something new, especially a business. And if you've got the big idea, but the details can be overwhelming, well, that's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform powering millions of businesses around the world. In fact, it drives 10% of all e-commerce in the US. From household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that actually matches your style, and there's no coding required. Need help with your product descriptions or marketing? Shopify's AI tools can write headlines, enhance product photos, and even help you run social campaigns. And when you're ready to sell, Shopify handles everything from managing inventory, international shipping, to processing returns and beyond. So if you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for a $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/Mac. Go to shopify.com/Mac. That's shopify.com/MACMac. Thanks, Shopify, for sponsoring this episode.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
January 17th, 2023, M2 Pro and Max chips were announced. So it was felt like just yesterday. It was 2 years ago. So almost 3 years ago. Time is flying, man. And so are these chips. These chips are just flying. They're very powerful. Okay, so I mean, that's really it with the MacBook Pro. You're still getting 1,000 nits, SDR brightness, 16 nits HDR, Thunderbolt 4 ports, 3 of them, SD cards. Like, nothing's changed there. Still comes in space black and silver. You can now, we talked about the storage is 4 terabytes instead of 2. You're still only limited to only 32 gigs. But that's fine for the people buying this. This is still going to be just fine. That's pretty much it for the M4 or M5 MacBook Pro. We can move on to the M5 iPad Pro.
So the M5 iPad Pro is a little bit of a bigger update.
Slightly.
It's more than just the chip, at least. With the MacBook Pro, it is singularly the chip, which is kind of related to some of these other things, like the storage options. But with the iPad Pro, we actually have some additional updated hardware in there. So, for example, if you buy a cellular iPad Pro, you now get that C1X custom Apple 5G modem, which is also available in the iPhone Air. It's based on the C1 modem that debuted in the iPhone 16e. So this is the first time it's appeared in an iPad, which Apple says actually leads to better 5G performance and it's more efficient. I think Apple said something like it was 50% faster cellular performance over the previous generation, which is pretty significant.
Yeah. I don't know how I test that. Is that like a speed test thing? Like how do you even measure this? But
I suppose so. I imagine the bigger impact will be on battery life.
Sure.
And that is why it has been so helpful to the long battery life of the iPhone 16e and in supporting the battery life despite that thin design in the iPhone Air.
You also have the N1 chip, so that will give you Wi-Fi 7, Bluetooth 6, and Thread support. This is also new, correct?
Yes, that's right. So this is the first time we've seen this chip in an iPad as well. We're expecting really both of these chips, Apple's custom modems and also its custom Wi-Fi and Bluetooth chips, to make their way across pretty much the whole lineup over the coming years. I think it is a matter of time before we even get the C1 or C2 or C3, whatever it will be by then, in the MacBooks. But also, we need to get it in the Pro iPhones as well next year.
Yeah, we're still using.
We're even expecting to see the N1 chip in the new HomePod Mini, in the new Apple TV, really spreading across the lineup, because it does allow Apple to stop relying on companies like Qualcomm and Broadcom for these components. And it also significantly improves efficiency. And maybe you're not bothered about the efficiency of your Apple TV or your HomePod, but certainly we do care about that in devices with a battery. And the long-term direction of travel here is Apple having more and more control over this silicon. And it wouldn't surprise me if in a few years, actually, there is no C1 chip. There is no N1 chip. What there is just everything packaged together in the main M series or A series chip. If it's in every device, that would seem to make sense. It's still fairly new technology, but I think Apple's done a great job, actually, of engineering something like this, considering that it had never done anything like this before. It's easy for us to kind of forget. We made such a big deal of Apple Silicon back in 2020, and we could really feel that difference. But it's pretty easy to overlook the fact that Apple had never made a cellular modem before and spent 7 or 8 years developing that technology and now finally is rolling that out to its devices. And it is yielding considerable efficiency improvements, which we would just not otherwise be able to obtain. So I think it is worth taking a moment to appreciate that.
Absolutely. The other thing the iPad Pro features is over 150 gigabytes per second of unified memory bandwidth, which is a 30% increase. So 2 times faster storage, faster read and write speeds. 256 and 512 models also have 12 gigs of RAM. So a lot of memory and storage boost there. Not that I think anyone's really going to notice that day to day, but it is significant, yeah.
Because years ago, or at least even as far as back as earlier this week, if you were to buy an iPad Pro and you wanted a 12 gigabyte iPad Pro, you had to shell out for the 1 terabyte model. But now, all but the entry level tier contain that option, just as standard. So I usually buy the 512 iPad. So I have usually missed out on that in the past. Going forward now, I will get that 12 gigabytes of memory. But I guess it isn't too surprising considering that the iPhone also now has 12 gigabytes of memory, at least if you buy an Air or a Pro model.
Also worth mentioning that if you don't get the 1 or 2 terabytes, you are losing a core. So it goes from 9 core for the 256 and 512 to 10 core CPU and GPU for the 1 and 2 terabyte models. Just FYI.
Yeah, so there is still some separation, which is a little bit confusing, but I understand why Apple doesn't want to be wasteful with these bent chips.
But why are we limiting nanotexture? Because I didn't want to get a 1 terabyte, but I wanted nanotexture on the 512. And you can't do that. You still are only limited to 1 and 2 terabytes. It's ridiculous.
That's a really good point, actually. I don't know why that would be the case. I think that is just classic upselling.
I honestly think that Apple probably makes some of these in advance, is my guess. And so they're like, well, the only people that are crazy enough to get this or care are probably ones that are going to want a 1 or 2 terabyte. That's my guess. This is stupid. I don't know. Like, just make those ones on, I guess they can't just make them on demand, but I don't know. I'm a little disappointed. So that's my only frustration with the iPad Pro. No new accessories for the iPad Pro. A little bit of a, not a bummer, but I guess we don't really need a new, we just got one, but I always like to see if there are any tweaks and things to them, but there's not.
There are two other changes though that are worthwhile.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
The first of those is it now supports 120 hertz refresh rates on external displays, which is interesting, really, considering that the studio display doesn't support that. So does that indicate that this rumored studio display that is on the horizon is going to support 120 hertz? Probably.
But also, did you see the picture that they used for that when they showcased? It looks like a studio display, but they changed just a little bit of it to make it not look like a studio display. Yeah. It's like, it's pretty freaking similar. Please tell me what monitor that is, because I'd like to buy that one or see what that one costs. Oh, you can't tell me that because it doesn't exist and it looks like your studio display. Yeah, so there was like a little, it's like the first time I've ever really seen Apple do that, where it's like a little breadcrumb that they left where it's like, all right, well, you basically just confirmed that that's coming. The other thing is fast charge support, which I am a little confused on, because I've had a couple of comments of people saying that's not new and that you can do that on the current generation. And if you look it up, if you Google it, AI is incorrect, I'm guessing, because it says you can do that on the M4, but all the other data points to no. So I don't understand, but if you have a 40 watt adapter or higher, you should be able to get 50% charge in about 30 minutes. People are telling me that you can do that already on the M4 version. So where do we stand on that? Incorrect.
I honestly don't know. I'm just going off Apple's press release here.
Right. So Apple's saying it, but like other people are like, no, you can do the same thing. And I'm like, wait, what?
Well, sometimes Apple does regurgitate in these press releases. It doesn't singularly focus on features that are new. That's why they talk about, oh, you know, the M5 iPad Pro is available with nanotexture. Well, as though it's a new feature, but of course it isn't. So maybe those people are actually right.
Yeah, it's possible. Either way, I mean, if you're upcoming from you probably shouldn't upgrade from an M4 to an M5. But if you are coming from anything older and you're thinking it's about that time, you're going to get fast charging for the first time. So that's good. And that is really the M5 iPad Pro. And perhaps the surprise stunner, which we knew this was coming, an M5 Vision Pro. But I didn't think this would be the most interesting option. And it is by far the most interesting one because it has the most changes. And not from a visual perspective. Although, do you want to start with the accessories or do you want to do that last?
Let's do those last.
Okay. So really, there is one visual change, and that is there's a new dual knit band. And we'll talk more about that in a second. But there is an M5 Vision Pro. There's no longer an M2, right? That's what we had before, the original. Correct. And that's been discontinued. And the bigger kick in the pants is that you cannot trade that in for anything either, which is just classic, terrible corporate greed. I mean, come on. It is effectively a paperweight at this point for those who want to get a new one and are hoping. I mean, you can resell it.
Actually, that isn't Apple's fault.
Why?
Because Apple doesn't operate its own trade-in program.
Oh, that's right. And that's ridiculous too. I don't know, but go ahead.
So Apple is dependent on trade-in partners. And those partners take those devices, they make sure that they're operational, they clean them up, they wipe them, and then they will sell them on. So if you go and buy something on Amazon that is an Amazon refurbished device or Target or whatever it may be, that probably has come through Apple's trade-in program originally. And then that store has bought the stock from Apple's trade-in partner. But what that means is that that business is dependent on being confident that it can actually sell that product. And in this instance, it basically means that those partners are not interested in doing it. I imagine there are a few reasons for that. Part of it has got to be the fact that Vision Pro is going to be a difficult product to test and refurbish. And also, no doubt these companies will have had conversations with the likes of Amazon and other retailers and said, would you be interested in selling refurbished Vision Pro? And they probably have said no. And if there's no market for it, then there's going to be no Apple trade-in program.
It's probably just a cost thing too. It's going to cost more to buy those from Apple, you know, what they're getting in from the trade-in to what they want to sell them to make it worth the squeeze. So and all also, the things that you've said.
I mean, maybe offers were made to Apple about it, but if the pricing that Apple was offered was, yeah, we'll accept $100. So that's what you can offer your customers for trade-in. Then I think Apple will have thought that's too much of a PR disaster. Let's just not even do it in the first place.
That's true. Well, I mean, is that worse than, I guess so. Cause that is a funny thing. Like you can take nothing and you just kind of have to sell it third party, or you can take $100, but that's more insulting. It's like, I'd almost rather have nothing and just keep it.
I think Apple probably should have found a way to make this work and to have eaten some of the cost, even if all they could provide was $500 toward a new model. I think that it could have dealt with the bad PR around that. And I think that there will be people who are very passionate about Vision Pro. Those people are out there who will be excited to upgrade to this. And those people probably just, if you're in the market for spending $4,000 on this thing anyway, you probably don't care about how much you're getting for it at trade-in. And you would just be grateful to hand your old one off and receive your new one.
So here's the thing, though. I think this could set up a good opportunity for people who are interested but didn't want to spend $3,500, but like maybe want something under $2,000. If not already, I have not checked the used market, but there's probably going to be in the next month or two a good used market out there of ones that, you know, have been used by people that hopefully are in good enough shape to where you can buy it and maybe get it for like $1,500. And that is a really intriguing option, because it's not like this. I mean, this is a big upgrade in my opinion, but it's not enough to where it's like, oh, you're not getting all of the features that make Vision Pro great. You're just not getting them at the best of its ability. That's what the M5 chip really improves, is like all of the things that were already pretty good. It, in theory, we haven't tested it, should be making these things better, but you should still experience a lot of these things. And so if you're on the fence and you've been wanting to get it, but you're like 35 is too steep, check out the used sales market, the third party, like maybe you can find a good one for a really good entry price, and then it might be really worth it. But I don't know, just my thought.
I actually thought about doing that myself, but the concern that I had was that I would be worried about warranty because Vision Pro is a notoriously delicate device. And also there are quite a large number of reports of the hardware not being super reliable and things like updating to Vision OS 26, bricking it completely, and Apple stores insisting that the whole device needs to be replaced. The most well-known one is the crack that develops in the middle of the glass. So I would love to actually buy a used one for the occasions when I'm curious about the changes in Vision OS, new immersive content, things like that. I would really, really like to. But I know that the thing that holds me back is I'm going to wake up one day and see a crack there, and there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah. That's the risk you'd be taking, but you'd be taking it new. Just your point is you have the ability to bring it back to Apple, and they should do something about it. So, that's kind of the risk behind it. But if you decide to get an M5 chip, Hartley, may I interest you in quite a few improvements? So obviously you're getting the M5 chip. That is the biggest thing here. So you're going to get that 10 core CPU, 10 core GPU. This is a huge update considering that we're going now three chips ahead from what it had before. And it's not like it was really that bad performance wise, but there were some areas where you're like, this is kind of slow, and some things, it just wasn't always the smoothest thing. I'm expecting a lot better performance gains and battery life. You're getting an increase in battery. It's also a little bit heavier, which is hilarious because the thought of this thing getting any more heavy is just not great. But what are your, you want to go through some of the bigger changes here? I left them for you.
Sure. So on the point of weight, I have mixed feelings about this, because the idea of a heavier Vision Pro does feel slightly horrifying. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that it is down to the design of this new dual knit band. So what Apple has done is the top piece of the band is effectively like the old solo loop that came mm-hmm. with the headset, in that it's just a knitted piece of fabric. The back now contains tungsten weights. So Apple has intentionally added weight. The idea is that it acts as a counterweight. So it should lift some weight off the front of the device and give you the sensation that it is lighter, even though undeniably the whole thing is heavier.
Right.
But it should take some of that pressure off the front of your face. I'm really interested to try this out. I'm definitely going to book an appointment at a local Apple store and go and try out this new headband.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little misleading in the fact that it is heavier, but it's because we're putting weights on the back, which is the only time, like you said, it is acceptable for this. Is that because how many times have people gone out with the first gen and just bought a different strap that did that exact same thing? Now Apple's doing it for you with what they should have done to begin with. The most comfortable band is that the original one. And I think I've seen people buy two of those and then just basically recreate the same thing. Now you don't have the weights, but like, if you're going to do one on top, it was so much more comfortable to be able to like tighten it in and have that up here. So I'm excited to try this and see how, if this helps at all. But that's one of the biggest changes. The second one is that the M5 chip is just so much more powerful that it can now render out basically 10% more pixels compared to the previous model, which 10% is a pretty big number in this case. So you're going to get sharper images and text, and it can ramp up to 120 hertz refresh rate. That's huge.
So it should make a noticeable difference when using the mm-hmm. device. So before, it's the way that most virtual reality and mixed reality headsets work is that they use foveated rendering. So where you are looking in the center of your vision will be fully rendered and sharp. But the further out you go to the edges, the image will be blurred and won't be fully rendered because it's sort of in your peripheral vision and you don't need it to be. I remember when I had my Vision Pro before I returned it. It was bothersome to me. I was aware of that. And it is a necessity because it takes a lot more computing power to be able to do that, which does have an impact on battery life and on the experience of using the device. So I think 10%, it should make a little bit of a difference. It might just make it that little bit more palatable. And equally, the refresh rate. Previously, it was up to 100 hertz. Now 120, which is, of course, what we're used to on the MacBook mm-hmm. Pro, the iPad, the iPhone. So that also should make the experience just that little bit smoother, especially with things like, I don't know if you have ever experienced this with Vision Pro, but sometimes if you're moving things around very fast, like windows in 3D space, I was aware that I was not hitting the same refresh rate that I'm used to from like scroll on, the iPad. So making it feel that little bit more fluid and a little bit sharper, I think is something that Vision Pro really has needed, given how slow the input gestures can sometimes feel.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. I've noticed that throughout how long have we had this now? Year plus, almost 2 years getting there?
Yeah, it's getting on for 2 years now.
In February, I think. So, I mean, I think this is going to make a big difference. Also, having 120 hertz support, for the Mac virtual display, like you said, that was like, that's what I use the most. So I think that's what I'm going to notice the most. I'm interested to see how well and like how much this will impact, you know, being in lower light and you are looking at the pass-through mode. Like, does that help at all? I know there are some ways that that's supposed to help it, but I'm not sure.
I don't think it is going to help that personally. I think that a lot of that comes down to the cameras. And was Vision Pro using the 48 megapixel wide camera that we now have on all three of the latest generation iPhones? I think that would be significantly better, but they are just quite old 12 megapixel cameras. And it shows in low light environments. So while you're getting a better visual experience, the hardware here is still the same. So it's the chip that is doing the heavy lifting. The displays are still the same displays. The cameras are still the same cameras. These are exactly as rumored, the same components that have been supposedly stacked up in warehouses for Vision Pro's first generation ones that did not get built. And Apple thought, let's put an M5 in here. And full credit to them, they are maximizing what they are getting out of this M5 chip and this existing hardware. It is still somewhat limited by that.
It's pretty crazy. The M5 is also doing this for the battery life too. We're getting a full half hour extra in some cases. Is it even an hour?
I think it can be up to an hour more depending on what you're doing. But essentially, you're talking about a 25% battery increase, which for a device that debuted with a 2 hour battery life, is pretty good. I mean, I know no one's going to be that excited for 30 minutes, but it does help a little bit because I know when I had my few weeks of using my Vision Pro, I was aware of that battery just going down. What felt like by the minute I could just watch it, and it would just drop and drop and drop. So I think that just half an hour will provide that little bit of extra headroom. Realistically, you still need to carry another battery pack if you want to use it out and about. You still really need to connect it to power when you're at home.
I'm genuinely shocked that there hasn't just been another battery created. It's not like you need to put the battery inside. It's an external thing. So why Apple hasn't made a pro version of the battery that can double, you literally make it as heavy as you want. It doesn't matter. People don't have to buy that one. But if they're like, I want this experience where I don't have to plug in, you know, I'm sitting on the couch, I don't care. Why haven't they made a secondary battery that can offer more? I don't quite understand that. Maybe they're just at this point, if you're going to be there that long, you should just plug in.
Pretty much. And I think the issue that Vision faces really is just that the sales are so low that Apple's not interested in doing a huge amount with it. I think that what it has done with this update is significant. It's more than I was expecting. And I personally do feel a temptation to dive into it again and give it another chance, which I think is what they are aiming for. But there's no way that this is going to perform better than the previous generation. This is still going to be one of those things where if you see someone trying it out in an Apple store, that will be a rarity. And I can't see Apple stores really selling more of these, especially considering that in the US, at least, the price is the same.
Wait, are you saying people don't try them out at the store? Or just don't buy them?
I'm saying that in general, you hardly see people queuing to try it on anymore. You might see one person.
Maybe that's a London thing. Every Apple store that I've been in since it's come out, there's still constantly people trying it on. And a line.
Really?
For
that's interesting.
My home store, I went to two a couple weeks ago in New York. All of them had lines to try it every single time. I am also just completely amazed by that too. I figured by this point, people who wanted to try it have tried it. But no, I see people constantly doing it, always.
That's interesting. And I hope that the new headband will help provide a little bit more confidence about how comfortable the device is during those demos. That's the thing I'm most interested to see when I next get a chance to test it out. But it's just that price. That price
still,
is a big
still
ask.
$34.99. Yeah, they could have just done $3,000, $29.99, and I feel like more people would be like, "Meh, I'm a little more intrigued. It's got a different number to start. I might want to." It's not by much, but it's a dollar under $3,000.
The price has gone down in some countries, so it is £300 cheaper in the UK. I believe it's also cheaper in Europe now.
Interesting.
So in some other countries, it may be slightly more palatable, but again, dropping from £3,500 to £3,200 is still not enough to tempt me. So it's the issue with it is that I was thinking about this yesterday, that I would really like to pick one up again and actually keep it. There have been many times when I have thought I would right now really like to use Mac Virtual Display. I would like to try out some of this immersive content. I want to look at some of my panoramic photos blown up really huge in my room. I want to try out some of these interactive widgets. There are definitely things in VisionOS that I would really like to try. But I know that if I spend that money on this device, it is going to, the majority of its life, sit untouched and unused.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that it isn't a great piece of hardware. And I would actually spend a considerable amount of money on that. But at this price, considering that I also want to get the prescription lenses, because I wear glasses and contact lenses, I also am going to need a decent storage case for it. I probably am going to need to upgrade the storage as well. We're floating around 4,000 at that point. And for a device that also you have to buy Apple Care on pretty much, because it's pretty fragile, and you have to baby it, it's not the easiest thing to take with you on a flight or when you're traveling. And if you do, if you're trying to travel light and you maybe you don't have checked luggage, that is a considerable consideration as well. I don't know if it's still just a little bit too much of a bad deal. And it is a shame because I think I probably would buy at maybe 2,500 and I would be okay with this being a toy that I could bring out and play with, you know, a couple of times a month or watch a movie on it or something. But at this price, it's just, I don't know that it's there.
Do you know anyone that has one that like kept good care of theirs that you could buy off of if they don't want it anymore? Should look into that market. Personal,
I mean,
people.
In the tech community, there's going to be plenty of those people now.
Yeah, that's what you need to do. Buy from a YouTuber. That's upgrading.
I mean, that's like the whole market.
Yeah, I got one for you. all right. Well, the last thing that we should talk about is this, which didn't even talk about it at WWDC. I completely forgot that Logitech made a basically, we talked about the Apple Pencil support and like, oh, there's going to be an Apple Pencil for the Vision Pro. And then that just didn't happen. But Logitech made one. And so it technically does exist. There is a stylus support for Vision Pro. And now that is officially launched and it's available. It's called the Logitech Muse. And it's a spatial stylus, which does kind of look interesting. It kind of makes using the Vision Pro for creative things and writing down notes. And like, if you want to use it kind of like a, I don't know, virtual pen and paper for things or a drawing board, like you can. And that's pretty intriguing.
I think the main market for this accessory is really business customers.
Yeah.
So Vision Pro has been quite successful in corporate environments. So some airlines have been using it when as part of onboarding pilots and training them. It's also popular in some medical training. It's popular in architecture and design, seeing things in 3D space. And it is easy to forget about that, actually, because I know we're kind of saying it's only popular among YouTubers. It is popular for some business applications where before they were using like Microsoft HoloLens, which of course is discontinued now and is slowly losing support. So Vision Pro does seem to be taking over that market, which is great. And having a stylus with physical controls, if you're, it's not so much for like 2D writing of notes and things like that, because undoubtedly you will be better off using an Apple Pencil and an iPad for that. This is for manipulating things in 3D space. So let's say you have a model of a building and you want to like enlarge the windows on that or, So, you know, you don't want to just use like pinching controls. It would be too slow. Right. You need something that you can actually click a physical button and have a point that exists in the real world that is very closely tracked by the device. So I don't know if I'll actually get a chance to try that out, but I can really see that being very popular for users in these more serious workflows and corporate environments. And the same, to a lesser extent, goes for the PlayStation VR controllers. Because although, yes, you can use that for gaming, Apple is using the example of gaming, that also can be used for things that are in that environment. They effectively serve as Vision Pro's default physical controller now, which is interesting. They will be available to buy in Apple stores next month, even a charging dock for them.
Yeah, for $249, which, like, honestly, I would just buy the whole PlayStation VR for $400 and then just use the controllers when you want to. But that way you've got both experiences at that point. That's just me personally. But yeah, controllers are kind of expensive for what they are. But yeah, you can already use them now, correct? This is just now that Apple's supporting that and making it their option to buy in stores.
Yeah, and selling it in Apple stores, you know, that really signals that this is an out-of-the-box, almost first-party-like experience. And to date, there have not been physical motion-tracked controllers for Vision Pro. And Apple has really stepped up support for that, which should be interesting, because the thing that has bugged me, and I've referred to it so many times on this show, is just how much it bothers me that Vision Pro is not very responsive to physical gestures. It's very accurate, but it is not fast. So when it comes to getting work done, looking at something and then pinching, that takes time. So if I actually want to get work done, it's just not appropriate for that. It's great for media consumption. It's good for looking through photos. But if I actually want to go through my photos library and maybe delete some stuff I don't want anymore, that's just agonizing. It's a consumption device, not a creation device. And controllers are the way that we get toward that being faster, because pinching gestures when you are dependent on eye contact is just not going to ever be able to match that. Because inevitably, if you think about it, when you use your Mac, you are interacting with that keyboard and trackpad without looking at each key, I would hope, that you touch. You just... And sometimes you will look at different parts of the display while still typing and moving the cursor. You'll do all this stuff at once. So it kind of drags everything down a lot. So I think that we do need to move toward physical controllers. I would really like to see, with a true second generation Vision Pro, Apple actually offer some kind of first party controllers that are somewhere between an Apple Pencil and a PSVR controller, maybe with some physical buttons, some haptic feedback, and something that could really speed things up. Because I wouldn't mind having like a magic wand type accessory with some buttons.
I hate to break it to you, but I feel like you're going to be waiting for a very long time for that, because all reports indicate that Apple has basically stopped doing anything on Vision Pro or Vision Pro Lite, Air, whatever we're going to call it. And it's now all about beating Meta in the Meta Ray-Ban displays, which I'm hoping I can get some very soon. But yeah, that's the M5 in a nutshell. If you're anyone with a few generations older of any of these products, maybe aside from Vision Pro, we'll just put that aside, but like iPad Pro, MacBook Pro, definitely upgrade. It's fine. You're going to have a good performance-based machine for sure. Obviously, you know, what if you just bought something new, that you probably shouldn't do it, but it's going to be great for everybody else. So, you know, that's where we're at. Anything else you'd like to add about the M5?
I think that the last thing I would add about M5 in Vision Pro is Apple has been able to do so much just from the chip to improve the experience. Considering what you just said about how Apple has allegedly, and I believe these reports personally, stopped all work on any future headset products of any kind. It's all been paused, not canceled, but just suspended. I would be very interested to see if Apple can actually get more out of the M5 chip over the next few years. So by the time we get to Vision OS 27, is Apple going to say, actually, we've been able to get another 10% more pixels out of the device now to keep moving it forward with the existing hardware, which I think would be really good. And the M5 looks like an incredibly powerful chip. So I think anyone that buys one of these devices is going to be pretty happy.
Agreed. All right. Yeah. Hit us up. Let us know what you think of all of this new stuff. And we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.